You are Locked On MLB, your daily MLB podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, baseball fans, and welcome to Locked On MLB, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, where it's your team every day. This is the daily podcast where we talk about all of Major League Baseball. And I'm your host, Paul Francis Sullivan. Please call me Sully on today's episode, which is being dropped on the 21st day of April 2020. I'm going to be making an announcement regarding a special event that Locked On MLB will be a part of, and I'll be playing a classic Sully Baseball rant from 2014. The show is available on the free and easy-to-use Himalaya podcasting app. We're also available wherever you get your podcasts. You can stream us from the website, which is lockedonmlb.com, and as we're all staying home in the middle of this COVID-19 crisis, be smart, don't go out, but if you have a smart device, tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On MLB or check out some of the other great shows of the Locked On Podcast Network, where it really is your team every day, including Locked On Fantasy Baseball with Scott Cullen. Follow us on Twitter at Locked On MLB underscore net. We're also at Locked On MLB on Instagram. I'm your pal Sully. I'm at Sully Baseball on Twitter, Sully Baseball Podcast on Instagram. Before I get to this rant that I did, 6 years ago I did this one, but you know what? It's still valid. I am very, very happy and be proud to be participating in Podapalooza. And I will be having an original episode be part of the lineup of Podapalooza, which is a virtual festival to raise money for COVID-19 relief. Think of it as Live Aid, but for podcasts. Who am I? Am I going to be the queen? Am I going to be the Phil Collins? Am I going to be the Led Zeppelin reunion? I don't know. Those are all big acts for Live Aid. And your pal Sully is going to be doing a Locked On MLB episode for it. But to listen to it, you buy a ticket. And that gives you access to a special Podapalooza podcast where over 100 incredible podcasters will be showing their work. You've got a festival schedule. New episodes will drop over the course of a weekend. Listen as they come out, or save the content for later. All the money goes to give directly, a nonprofit providing economic relief to the families that have been hit hardest by this pandemic. Now, we've been thinking about how we can make a positive impact in light of this current crisis, and I am personally thrilled to have a chance to do something that I love while contributing to this important cause. So here's the deal. The festival goes live on April 25th, just in a few days, and they'll be featuring Locked On MLB, and there's only one way to tune in. You get a ticket. So you go to podapalooza.org, or plza.org for short. It's plza.org. Tickets are pay what you can. So you want to contribute to the effort, and maybe you can discover some new podcasts along the way. There's some really terrific podcasts that are on there. Some from the Wondery Network, like Even the Rich is going to be on there. LeVar Burton Reads is going to do a new podcast from there. The No Sleep Podcast. The Lauren Shippen Encyclopedia Womanica. There's some really good podcasts on there. Chad Ford's NBA Big Board is on there. The Brown Girls Guide to Politics is on there. There's some other really... there's some very good shows that are on there, some that I know and are familiar with, and some that I'm going to be listening to for the first time. So it's a way to listen to, and I believe there's going to be a couple other lockdown shows as well along the way, but, oh, Mystery Recipe is going to be on there. Okay, there's some really good shows that are on there, and I bet some other terrific shows that I am just now getting a hold of. So look it. It is going to be a terrific cause. I'm very, very proud and very, very honored that I was asked to participate in this and create an original show. I'm not pulling a show from the archive from this. I wrote and created a brand new episode. And please, please participate in Podapalooza. I think it's going to be a great cause. I think it's going to be a great show. And your pal Sully is going to be a part of it. So let's listen in on that. Okay, what I'm going to be playing is part of a podcast that I did from the old Sully Baseball Daily podcast, when I did one every single day, 365 days a year, rain or shine, kidney stone or not. And this was a podcast that I did. I didn't always do them inside. Sometimes I kind of recorded some spontaneously. And on this particular day, which was back in 2014, I decided to record a podcast. It was August 22nd, 2014. I recorded a podcast while I was outside of a barbershop waiting for my turn to get my hair cut. And along the way, I talked a little bit about fandom and how I became a baseball fan, sort of my origin story to a degree, but also specifically about the 1979 Red Sox, a team that did make the postseason, is not a team that is one for the ages and one for the lore, but it was the first team that I followed every single day. And to me, it is still a vital episode to explain the nature of fandom. So let's go back in time to August of 2014, when my biggest concern was, when am I going to get my hair cut?
I mean, I still have hair on my head, which is a positive thing. And I'm, you know, hair is going gray, and I'm not making any attempt to stop it from going gray, because as long as it's on my head, I want people to know, you know, how secure my hair is. It's staying on my head even as it's going gray. And I'm starting to go gray, and I'm hoping I can pull off the gray. Some people pulled off the gray great. Richard Gere went gray, looks fabulous. Looks like a million damn bucks. Bob Barker went gray. When he was coloring his hair, one time, hell with it. I'm going to go gray. You look like a million damn dollars. I'm hoping to pull the full gear, the full Barker. But an interesting thing, I realized something today. And Carl Yastrzemski was one of my first baseball heroes. My first baseball hero was Butch Hobson, because his name was Butch, and I thought that was a cool name. But Yaz was the hero of the Red Sox when I started following them in the late 1970s. And the first real year that I followed baseball, like really followed baseball, was 1979. And in that year, it was a very, very special year to be a Boston Red Sox fan and to be specifically a fan of Carl Yastrzemski. Yaz collected his 3,000th hit and his 400th home run that year. And he became the first American leaguer ever to accomplish both of those feats. Now, I don't have it in front of me right now, but I believe I know he joined Willie Mays. I know he joined Stan Musial and Hank Aaron. I think they, at the time, they were the only ones to achieve 3,000 hits and 400 home runs. And as we know, they all did that in the National League, with the exception of two seasons that Henry Aaron spent with the Milwaukee Brewers at the end of his career. But he had already passed 3,000 hits as a member of the Milwaukee and Atlanta Braves. I digress. It was the first year they wore their blue hats after wearing the red hats, and it was the year after Bucky Bleep and Dent, which I was too young to understand. I didn't understand the significance of that. I just didn't think the Red Sox were allowed to play in the playoffs. I just thought that's not how it worked. And so this was the first year I understood how the pennant race worked. I understood what the stats meant, you know, as much as you did back in 1979. And that I really knew who all the players were. Fred Lynn had an unbelievable season, at least by the standards that were used in 1979, as did Jim Rice. But the Red Sox, while they had a winning season, they didn't really contend. The Baltimore Orioles took control of the season. And sadly, that was also the year that Thurman Munson died. And the Yankees fell out of it. Well, they were falling out of it before Munson died, but they never really could catch Baltimore after the death of Munson. For the Red Sox, the reason to follow them was Yaz. And so I want you to picture, I was 7 years old, living in suburban Massachusetts. My teacher, I sort of overflowed from first grade to second grade that year. And my first grade teacher was Mrs. Bresciani, whose husband at the time was the statistician of the Red Sox. Now he's a vice president, I think their main historian. But she was the one who taught me all about stats. She taught me what the back of the baseball cards meant. She taught me what it meant to keep score. And so, oh, look at that, a car alarm. So in essence, if you were ever doing a Sully Baseball docudrama. And inevitably it will happen. There will be a multi-million dollar production, and probably Russell Crowe will play me. That the scene of a young Sully in 1979 learning from Mrs. Bresciani would be part of the origin story. That would be the origin of Sully. And learning, oh, that's what this is what an RBI means, this is what a run means, this is what a batting average means. So I was able to follow that season and really follow, you know, the ins and outs and the stats and everything like that. Now, the interesting thing about Yaz and following him that year was he was that first connection that I felt to older baseball. Now, even though Willie Mays had only been retired for 6 years and Henry Aaron had only been retired at that point for only, what, 3 or 4 years, they might as well have been Honus Wagner and Wee Willie Keeler. I mean, if it was before I started following baseball, it was ancient history. And they were players that I know my dad followed Mays. I know my dad followed Hank Aaron. And Stan Musial, forget about it. That might as well have been, I don't know, from the Restoration comedy era. So the Yaz was that connection to an older era of baseball. Yaz was my grandmother's favorite player. And Yaz was the reason that Red Sox Nation, it wasn't called that then, but the reason that we have Red Sox fans and the existence of the Red Sox mania and the love for Fenway Park is directly connected to Carl Yastrzemski. Because before the 1967 pennant race, there was no great nostalgia for Fenway Park. In fact, there were plans to tear down Fenway Park and replace it with a dome in downtown Boston, one that would be shared with the Boston Patriots and the Red Sox, and would be connected to a new sports center that would house both the Celtics and the Boston Bruins. Attendance was terrible at Fenway Park. There was no difference between Fenway Park and, say, Connie Mack Stadium or Crosley Field or the Polo Grounds or Sportsman Park, all the old-timey stadiums that were knocked down and replaced with cookie-cutter ballparks or domes. Absolutely no difference. There was no nostalgia at all. And it was really only a matter of time before the Red Sox were going to build a symmetrical ballpark and a dome or something like that to play in. And then 1967 came out of the blue. Red Sox games, they had horrible attendance. Horrible attendance. There was no reason to go to Fenway Park. Even when Yastrzemski and the emergence of Tony Conigliaro, there was no reason because they were out of it, and they were always out of it. They were terrible, or they were mediocre in the 1950s, and after Ted Williams retired, they were downright bad. And then came 1967, and the Red Sox got involved in one of the great pennant races of all times, and the last great pennant race before it was split into divisions, where you had four teams going into the final weekend of the season. The Twins, the Tigers, the White Sox, and the Red Sox all could have won the pennant. And Yastrzemski had the kind of year. I mean, again, I'm sure someone's going to pull out advanced metrics that will belittle Carl Yastrzemski's year. I'm sure it exists. He won the Triple Crown. He batted 500 some odd down the stretch. I'm sure. Yeah, they'll pull him out and everything like that. But the fact of the matter is, by the metrics used during the day, it was one of the great stretches of all time. And the Red Sox won, clinched a tie for the pennant on the final game of the season, complete game throw by Jim Lomborg, and they ultimately won the pennant when the Angels beat the Detroit Tigers 3,000 miles away in a game in Anaheim. And with that victory, and with that pennant, we now have Red Sox Nation. You can point to it. It is that's an origin story as well. If the Red Sox have a mediocre year that everyone in the world thought they were going to have in 1967, we don't have Fenway Park right now. there isn't that connection. Even if the Red Sox wind up winning those World Series like the one they won last year, part of the thing that made it so special last year's World Championship, besides it being out of nowhere and in the wake of the Boston Marathon, was they won it at Fenway Park. And the same field where Williams and Doer and Yaz and Rice and all those players played. It's the same ballpark. Well, it wouldn't have happened. So my love for Yaz was part of that year. I didn't quite understand the significance of 67, but we saw lots of clips of 67. And I went to a bunch of games in 1979, and they had all the photographs of 67 and reminding things of 67 and the impossible dream. What was the impossible dream? And my dad would tell me it was the pennant that they won on the last day of the season. So I started to learn about that. I started to learn about 1975. And I started to realize that he was this connection. He was the first time that I experienced the wonderful, wonderful sensation of what it means to be a baseball fan. And that is being connected with the past, present, and future all simultaneously. That's what it means. You're rooting for a team. It's playing now. You hope they do well now and in the future. And you know that that is connecting to a history that seems to be happening simultaneously. All things are happening at once. Someone just beeped. That's what happens when you talk about the Yankees. That's what happened in the Giants when they have the statues to Mays and Marichal and McCovey and talking about the great moments of the past. And St. Louis plays it up the yin-yang, as do the Cubs, and as do all these great franchises, and even relatively young franchises. When you go to a game in Oakland, I've been to a bunch of games in Oakland this year, and you have so many reminders of, you know, even of the past. Even the race that they have for fun is between Ricky Henderson, Dennis Eckersley, and Raleigh Fingers, connection to the previous three greatest eras in the history of the Oakland A's. And of which you're celebrating that as well as watching the game on there. First time I experienced that was with Yaz. And so excited when he saw him get his 400th home run. Well, an interesting thing happened in 1979, which was a contest that Hillshire Farms and Kahn's Hot Dogs, which were a sponsor of the Red Sox, and Carl Yastrzemski was their spokesman. And they had a contest of whoever could guess, you know, when you filled out a little form. Back then you did everything by mail. And you had to have a proof of purchase of Kahn's or Hillshire Farms hot dogs, which were easy to get because we all ate hot dogs. We mainly ate Fenway Franks, but forget about it. For this, we were eating Kahn's hot dogs. And if you sent in this little order form with a proof of purchase, you could be involved in a contest. Whoever gets the date that Yaz will hit his 3,000th hit the closest, whoever had to pick the closest date, well, that they would win a Yaz 3,000 hit T-shirt and a Yaz 3,000 hit poster. And so my brother and I, we entered it, put our names on it. And along the way, and this is before internet, this is before ESPN. I think ESPN existed at this point, but we didn't have cable TV. And I think at the time, all they were doing was showing, like, you know, gorillas playing volleyball or something like that. It was in its infancy. And we would check every game as it got closer to 3,000. As it was getting into 2,900 something, whatever. As it's getting closer and closer. And I was absolutely hooked that I was going to see his 3,000th hit. And I don't remember the exact day that we had written out there, but it was getting closer. And then he got to 2,999, and he fell into a slump. And so we would watch the games. I'm cheering for Yaz. He would go 0 for whatever. And so one day, they're playing the New York Yankees, and I'm watching the game, still couldn't get it. So I, 7-year-old Paul Sullivan, body probably filled with Hostess Twinkies and about a gallon and a half of High C or Hawaiian Punch, had to go to the bathroom. So I went to the bathroom. We had this little bathroom in the first floor of our house in Weston, Massachusetts. And I was there, and I got another drink or something, because, you know, what the heck? I emptied myself out. Might as well fill myself right back up. And when I came back into the family room where my dad had the baseball game on, my dad had an expression on his face that was essentially, uh-oh. And I said, what? And he said, he got it. So that was also the first lesson, a very important lesson that I learned, and that was don't leave the room with the TV on. If you're there specifically to watch a sporting event for a specific reason, pee when the Yankees were up. Pee when someone else is up. Pee when Dwight Evans was up. Pee when Jack Brohammer is up, or whoever the hell else was there. You know, don't go there. Try to line it up. Time it out. And I've learned to be a much better peer, and I was very, very frustrated. But then I found out we won the contest. My brother and I did. We got the T-shirt, and we got the poster. And the poster hung very proudly in our basement next to the Star Wars poster and the poster of Jim Rice. And it was a picture of Kari Strumsky swinging the bat, and there was about five giant Hillshire Farms and Khan's Kielbasa stickers all over it. And we got a Yaz 3000 T-shirt, which I bet if I dig deep enough in my parents' house, I bet I can still find. I guarantee you I cannot fit in it. But that was my first great baseball highlight and memory of following that 3,000 hit chase and knowing that my brother and I, we won that poster. We earned that T-shirt. That was ours. Ted and I would share, you know, we shared the T-shirt because we were roughly the same size. And today, you know, he wore the Yaz shirt one day. I wore it. And I wore it till it was snug. I wore it till it was like, I looked like I should be at a Village People concert. I was just tight on my body. Well, today Yaz turns, well, he turns 75? Is that what it is? Lord, born 1939, which seems like ancient history. But something that really made my eyes pop open today when I was thinking about Kari Yastrzemski. You know, I followed Yaz right to the end. And in 1983, when he announced that it was going to be his final season, I thought, well, the Red Sox have to win the World Series this year because Yaz can't retire and not have a world championship. And very early in 1983, it was clear they were not winning squat. And I went to a bunch of games that year, and I saw his final game and him crying and him doing the little lap. And he did the lap before Cal Ripken ever did. And he was finally taken out of the game. And I have his picture still hanging in my room in my parents' house of Yaz tipping his helmet on his final at-bat with Gary Allenson on deck. And he just was this relic from a past, a relic from a different time, a relic from an era that just, wow, it just seems like he belonged in a different moment that I was able to experience. But here's the thing that freaks me out. I'm older than Yaz was when he got his 3,000th hit and 400th home run. He was 40 years old. I'm 42. I don't feel as old as Yaz was. I don't feel like a relic. Yaz looked old. He looked like an old man. And he was an athlete by trade. But alas, I'm an older man than he is. And when I was saying that I'm part of a game where time seems to stand still, and you're part of the past, present, and future all at the same time, well, I'm further along the future than I really thought I was. Maybe that's why I need to get my hairs trimmed and stuff cleaned out of my ears, and my hair is going gray. I'm older than Yaz was. When I was 7, he looked ancient. What the hell must I look like?
Well, thanks so much for listening to the show. And please, again, follow us on Podapalooza. And that's going to be hashtag Podapalooza. And I'm going to be part of a lineup of some fun shows. That it's going to be really great honor to be raising money and to be creating a new episode for that. So follow at Podapalooza for information about that. And I'll also be posting that on both LockedOnMLB_net on Twitter and on my personal Twitter account, which is at Sully Baseball. Thanks for listening. This has been the Locked On MLB podcast for the 21st day of April 2020. I'm your host, Paul Francis Sullivan. Please call me Sully.